Yippee-ki-yay, mother.
I want you to hit me as hard as you can.
Come with me if you want to live.
Why so serious?
Shall we begin?
You're listening to the Adventures in Nerding podcast on adventuresinnerding.com.
That is what broke people do when they can't afford a professional announcer. They just do it themselves. This is Corey Knott, and you are with listening to the Adventures in Nerding podcast on adventuresinnerding.com. If you want to see my writing, go to smosno.com or, you know, search for me on the interwebs. But today I have a special guest. She's super awesome. She has 1,000 jobs. Her name is Emma Fife.
Hi, Emma. Hello, that's me.
Can you explain everything you do?
You know, it all falls under the term broadcaster, what the Brits would term a broadcaster, which means that mostly what I do is just me being myself, having opinions on things and talking about them intelligently. I kind of got started in the whole broadcasting world, doing my Sailor Moon podcast, which I still do to this day. It is called Love and Justice. And then that kind of branched into doing some after shows at AfterBuzz TV, which led me to dip my toe in some stuff at Screen Junkies and did some guest appearances on Force Center, which is Ken Knapsack, Lauren Landa, and Joseph Scrimshaw's Star Wars podcast. And then Ken went over to Collider and was like, you should come do stuff at Schmoes. So I'm on Schmoes. I'm on TV Talk. I also do a bunch of stuff over at Hyper RPG, which is a Twitch channel, twitch.tv/HyperRPG. I am one of the main cast members on their Star Wars show, which is called Pencils and Parsecs. We play the Edge of the Empire role-playing system. It's so much fun. And then I'm also doing, I do now stuff for their YouTube channel. We've started doing some trailer reactions. You can check me out in trailer reactions. This week we did the latest Wonder Woman trailer and the latest Spider-Man Homecoming clip. And then I also am now doing some solo streaming there as well, where I am playing Persona 5, which is a lot of fun. So, yeah, I do a lot of things on the internet. Basically, without the internet, I don't exist.
And you have a day job, which
I do, yeah. I am also a tour guide at Universal Studios Hollywood. So, yeah, I do a lot.
So you don't sleep?
not a whole lot, no.
What motivated you to be this broadcaster, this host?
Well, it's actually sort of a funny story. So my background is in musical theater. That is what I studied when I was in college. That was what I did throughout my childhood. I started acting in plays that also had songs in them when I was about 11 years old. And I just really never stopped all the way up until, gosh, I stopped touring, which is what I did right after college. But I remember growing up I'm sure I wanted to be in musicals. I thought maybe I wanted to be on Broadway someday or something. But I really liked this British television series called Changing Rooms. And Changing Rooms is the show upon which the American TLC series Trading Spaces was based. And if you're not familiar with the show, basically two friends, often neighbors, switch houses for a few days to redo a room in one another's house. And the American version of the show was hosted by a woman named Paige Davis. And Paige Davis also had a background in musical theater. So, like, she was Babette, the broomstick in Beauty and the Beast, amongst many other things. But I remember thinking, like, oh, well, her, you know, she was a musical theater person. So if musical theater doesn't really work out for me, like, obviously hosting is another, like, viable career option. So it was always kind of in my head that was something I potentially wanted to do. And when I was in college, I remember kind of discovering as I started directing shows and stage managing and doing makeup and costumes that I was a lot more comfortable being myself than a lot of the other kids who I went to school with who, like, really just wanted to be actors and, like, were great at playing other people but got really awkward when they had to be them. And I just kind of was like, I mean, I think I'm pretty cool as me. So I kind of just want to live a life where I just get to be myself and have opinions on things. So that's kind of how it all came about.
Well, you're living the dream so far.
I am, yeah. It's you know, it's a lot of work, but it's good. Things are really good right now.
Now, since the show is called Adventures in Nerding, it would beset me not to talk about some of the things you're nerd over. And usually, I play a little intro, but I wanted to get more personal for people.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I had Ken Knapsack on, and you know, I didn't play anything for him because I couldn't find any like good, you know, Star Wars rock songs that could actually play. So I'm looking I was looking for a Sailor Moon rock song, and one, I would never use this as an intro. Two, it is scary as all hell. And three, it is a strange. And I really want you to hear it.
Oh, I'm so excited.
So that was that.
Okay. Well, that's certainly interesting. I mean, I like the gumption behind the background music. I'm not so sure about those vocals.
Well, you know, on any corner of the internet, you can find something about something.
Cool.
And yeah, you can find hard rock songs about just about anything, even My Little Pony. So with Sailor Moon, what got you into it? Was it the manga? Was it the anime?
So actually, the first sort of Sailor Moon memory that I have is I remember seeing ads for the toys on TV. So back when it first started airing in the U.S., so this would have been 1995, it aired in syndication on a bunch of UPN networks. And it aired like really, really early in the morning. And I'd never actually seen the show, but I started seeing ads for the toys. And then like when we would go to the mall, I would always like look at them at KB Toys and think like I sort of wanted to buy them, but I didn't really know what the show was about. So I wasn't sure if I could like buy toys for a show that I didn't know what it was. And then kind of the impetus actually for me to start watching it was I was at horseback riding camp. I grew up in Connecticut, I should preface. So going to, you know, equestrian camp is a pretty normal Connecticut thing. And there was this girl who I went to camp with. I cannot for the life of me remember her name. But she asked me if I watched Sailor Moon. And because I was like semi-familiar with what it was, because I'd like seen the toys and like a couple of ads on TV, I've always been the kind of person that, like, if somebody asks me a question about something I think I should know about, I always say, yes, I do know about it, and then I just fake it, which is honestly probably why I've gotten certain places in my career, is because it kind of goes with along with the whole idea of, like, say yes and figure it out later. But so, of course, I was like, oh, yeah, of course, Sailor Moon, totally, I know that thing. And then she started getting really excited about it, and I kind of played along for the rest of the day, and I was like, all right, I gotta watch the show. Mind you, I was 9 years old at this point. So yeah, the next day I made sure to find out when Sailor Moon was on TV and get up and watch it so that I could, intelligently converse about this subject with this girl. I started watching it when I was nine. I remember the first episode I watched was early on in the second season. It didn't really matter that much. It was a storyline that's not in the manga at all. So it's literally all filler. And then it was something that I remember I liked. I did buy a bunch of the toys. I had dolls of the... So basically, Bandai, I think it was, made these dolls. And they were hideous. They were not cute at all. And they had like... They had like Barbie size ones and like mini Barbie size ones. And they all had like their arms were just like straight down by their sides. They didn't even have like the Barbie bend in them. Cause for a long time, like before, now all Barbies have like totally posable arms. But back in the day, it was like classic Barbie, sort of 80s, 90s Barbie had like this L shape to her arm. But no, they just had like arms straight down by their sides, straight legs. I don't even think the legs were opposable at all. And just like weird, weird faces and oddly styled hair. But I had the mini Barbies of Sailor Venus, Sailor Mars, and Sailor Jupiter. And then I had like sort of the precursors to what are now really nice Proplica series things of like the Moonstick and the Henshin brooch. And so again, it was like, I liked Sailor Moon a lot when I was about, you know, 9, 10 years old. And then, in 1998 or 99, I can't remember, they started airing it again on Cartoon Network now as part of the Toonami lineup. And finally, it wasn't at like 6 in the morning and all out of order. They started at the beginning and they showed like a new episode every single day in that Toonami block after school. And I remember initially discovering it during the sort of midnight run that they used to do on Toonami, because I had a little bit of insomnia as a kid and I still get it occasionally. And I just like had I turned on my TV because I couldn't fall asleep and Sailor Moon was on. It was the first episode. And I was like, oh, man, I remember this show. And now I was like probably 13. And I watched the first episode and I like didn't know what to do with myself afterwards. I just wanted to watch it again. And then discovered that it was, in fact, part of that Toonami lineup and was airing every day after school. Yeah. And so like that was where like the real Sailor Moon obsession began, was when I was able to like watch all of it from the beginning.
Did that all make you just a huge, huge anime fan in general?
Yeah, I mean, Sailor Moon was definitely my, like, gateway anime. And during that initial Toonami block, Dragon Ball Z was on, like, right before Sailor Moon. So I started watching that as well, because my brother and I would watch, like, Sailor Moon and Dragon Ball Z together. And it did, I mean, that was just kind of the catalyst for me to discover, to Sailor Moon, I think, was the first thing I ever identified as anime, though. As a kid, like, I liked Speed Racer and I liked Voltron, both of which are actually anime. But I didn't necessarily identify them as being from Japan. The only thing prior to that, and again, I don't think I really necessarily thought specifically that it was Japanese. I just knew it wasn't the Disney movie. So I was obsessed with The Little Mermaid when I was a kid. It's the first movie I can remember seeing in theaters. And I was so obsessed with Little Mermaid that my dad actually bought me a VHS of what I now recognize is like the late 1960s Toei, which is the studio that animates both Sailor Moon and Dragon Ball Z. Toei did an animated Little Mermaid. Oh. It's not a series, it's just a movie, and it follows the Hans Christian Andersen fairy tale a lot more closely, so if you're familiar with that, it is a very different ending than the Disney movie, and I used to watch it all the time, and again, it was like, I didn't really identify that as anime until, again, like, I was probably 12 or 13 years old, and I was watching Sailor Moon on Toonami, and I was like, oh, cool. This is anime. This is the stuff that comes from Japan. Previously, we all called it Japanimation. That was a sad time in everybody's lives. But yeah, we got woke around 2000 and started actually referring to it as anime. And that's when I kind of realized, like, oh, wait, that movie that my dad got me when I was little is also anime. And so then once I, you know, got into Sailor Moon, and especially once Toonami started also airing things like Yoroid and Samurai Troopers, which was localized as Ronin Warriors, and like Gundam Wing, I got like way, way, way into anime, like to the point that we were really early adopters of TiVo, and I would go because I knew that they would show random anime on the Sci-Fi Channel. So I would literally like go on TiVo and I would go to Sci-Fi Channel and I would scroll through and I would, anything I like recognized, I would skip. But if I didn't recognize the title of an upcoming program, I would open it. And if there were like Japanese names in the credits listed in the little description bar, I would record it because it might be anime that I want to watch.
That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. And then you would just like also rent whatever random anime titles they had at Blockbuster. So like a lot of anime adaptations of fighting games.
So you're an anime purist, are you?
I don't know if purist is the right word. But certainly I went through an anime hipster phase as a kid. That is for sure.
So with Sailor Moon, because I, you know what, in prep for this interview, because mm-hmm. I knew you're a big Sailor Moon fan, I watched 107 facts about Sailor Moon. And one of them was
the Frederator video.
Yeah, I think one of them was that like the first two seasons what aired on one of the, you know, major networks, and
yeah,
they edited it down and covered things up and had an educational element. So
they sure did.
I was wondering what versions of it you watched.
Well, I mean that was the version that I watched as a kid. And it didn't occur to me that there was anything different. You know what I mean? Because it's like Sailor Moon was one of the first like anime series that got really, really popular outside of Japan. I mean, previous to that, I would say really only like Robotech, which is actually Macross, got any sort of level of popularity. And then certainly, you know, the Dragon Ball series as well. But, you know, we didn't know to want anything different. You know, I would argue like most people watching, you know, Voltron in the 80s, we didn't know that was actually like multiple Go Lion and another series like mashed together to make a new show. Like we just accepted. We're like, cool, this is what this is. Now, once I was watching Sailor Moon when I was a little bit older, you know, sort of by, I would say early 2000s, and I was, you know, starting to dabble in the internet, did I realize, oh, wait, I'm not getting Sailor Moon the way that it was meant to be seen. And initially, the easiest way to get Sailor Moon uncut was to read the manga, which is very different than the original 90s anime series. So I was watching the, you know, the 90s show on Cartoon Network, and also simultaneously doing research about everything that I was missing. And that was when Tokyopop started publishing the Sailor Moon manga. And the pages were flipped. So, you know, in Japanese, you read the opposite way. So we read from left to right in the U.S. In Japan, they read from right to left. So when Tokyopop released these initial publications, they flipped the images so that you were reading like you would read an American book. And they changed some of the names like they had done in the Deke version of the show, which was interesting, though, because in the Deke version of the show, they called Usagi, who is the protagonist, Serena. And in the manga, they called her Bunny, which is actually like a pretty accurate translation of the word Usagi, which is just rabbit. Her name was supposed to be Serena, but her nickname was Bunny. And in, I guess, the French language version of actually a lot of the other foreign language versions of the show, they did change the names and her name was Bunny in a lot of them. But other than those changes, they didn't really censor anything. And like, there's like skin melting off of skeletons in the Sailor Moon manga. Like there's some like pretty grotesque imagery in there. And so reading the manga, that was when I was like, okay, like I liked the anime series, but like this is metal and this is like the Sailor Moon that I really love. So again, it's like I do like the 90s anime is what introduced me to it, but it was like kind of going down the fandom rabbit hole and then eventually reading the manga that like really secured me into like, okay, Sailor Moon is a series that like I'm gonna come back to throughout my life. So yeah.
So when did you finally say like, you know what, I'm gonna do a podcast about this? Like,
actually, well, it was around the time that Sailor Moon Crystal, which is the new Sailor Moon anime series, started airing, which was in 2014. So Sailor Moon Crystal, still Toei, still Kotono Mitsuishi as the voice of Sailor Moon, who is amazing. In 2014, they started releasing a new Sailor Moon anime series. And this had been announced like long, long before. Like it got delayed many, many times. And I remember being really excited about this prospect because people were like, oh, are they going to continue it? And I remember thinking, like, I don't want them to continue it. I just want them to properly adapt the manga. And that's what Sailor Moon Crystal is. It is, it's a page to screen of the manga. And at the time, again, so obviously, like, I've come back to Sailor Moon so many times throughout my life. And so obviously with Crystal starting to air, I was like full on Sailor Moon fandom 100% again. And I was really into podcasts. I love the podcast, How Did This Get Made? And I was thinking about how ridiculous a lot of Sailor Moon is when you really, really think about it. And I was like, I want a podcast that like really like digs into Sailor Moon and really gets into it about, you know, all the different adaptations, the manga, the 90s anime, the live action series, and now Sailor Moon Crystal. I really wanted something that like compared all of those versions, and that simply didn't exist. So, yeah, my two best friends and I just decided to make it because we all liked Sailor Moon and we wanted to talk about it. So we just started doing a podcast.
It takes a lot of gumption just to put yourself out there, to put your fandom out there.
Yeah.
Especially when you know so much.
Yeah, for sure.
When you're a super nerd about something, to just put it out there. And I hand it to you. With all you do, plus holding a podcast together, that's impressive.
Yeah, I mean, it was one of those things, though, where, like, I think when we did it, like, we didn't really think about it. We just, we were like, yeah, we want to do this, so let's do it. Maybe some people will listen to it.
So flipping the script a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So you said off air that you are into Ninja Turtles.
I feel like was into it. It's not that I don't like Ninja Turtles, but like Ninja Turtles was my OG fandom.
Reformed. Your Ninja Turtles reformed, yes.
Yeah, it's not that I like specifically was like, oh, I don't like Ninja Turtles anymore. It's just that like I got more into other fandoms as I got older. But like the original like thing that I wanted all the clothes of and I collected all the toys of as a like tiny, tiny child was Ninja Turtles. Oh man, I loved that 80s cartoon series. That was my jam as a kid. And my parents liked it too. They thought it was really funny. So, yeah, it was a really, the greatest moment of my life I remember as a child, is when my aunt's, very dear friend, Paige Turco, was cast as April in the second Ninja Turtles movie. That was a great moment for me.
That had to be fun. There was controversy surrounding that second movie, too.
There was some controversy surrounding that second movie, but I was like, nah, man, like, that's awesome. I know April O'Neil.
Well, and it had one of the best rap songs about being a ninja ever.
Oh, come on. Oh, yeah, 100%.
Go Ninja.
That scene in the arcade at the end is, like,
go Ninja,
just
go.
Gold. Amazing. When I was a little kid, I had a... I used to watch Ninja Turtles all the time. I had multiple action figures of every single one of them. I had a Michelangelo like lounge pillow. I had like little stuffed animals of Michelangelo and Raphael, who were my faves. And I had like the van and the like pizza shooter thing. I loved Ninja Turtles as a kid. Now, the thing that's hilarious is that, like, as a kid, I had no idea that it was, like, based on a comic book series. I was like, no, this is just a TV show
super
that I like.
Super violent comic book series.
Yeah, no, totally different. And I have had the opportunity to work with or interview Kevin Eastman on multiple occasions. And I'm like, wow, you created this thing that I loved as a child. But it's very different than the thing that you created.
It's surprising, like, someone can create something so different.
Yeah,
and it,
yeah,
and it takes off. And it's, you know, I'm sure you interviewed the guy. Is he really proud that it took off, or is he kind of...
Oh, my God. Oh, Kevin is thrilled. Are you kidding me? Kevin is like, no, I'm cool. Like, Kevin, to me, exemplifies... just to bring it back to Japanese culture, because, you know, that's... I'm weeaboo garbage. So in Japan, there's no, the concept of selling out doesn't exist. You know, Naoko Takeuchi, who created Sailor Moon, is she has some issues with the 90s anime. She feels that it is not quite the story she wanted to tell, and that it has more of a male gaze than she intended for the show to have, because all of the animators at Toei were men. But again, she's like, I don't care. Like, I'm making lots of money off this thing. Good for me. And that's very much how Kevin is. Not in like an asshole kind of way, but like in a, no, cool. I created this thing and people ran with it and here we are.
Now, and I talked to Ace about anime.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me that you might be slightly against adapting, let's say, something like Sailor Moon into a live-action film.
Well, there's a live-action series of Sailor Moon already, and it's perfect. So I don't think it needs a live-action film. No, I mean, Ace and I actually were talking about this last night. You know, I look at things like Ghost in the Shell or, like, this Death Note thing that's happening, and even though, like, I personally am opposed to them, I have no desire to see them, I acknowledge they are not for me. These adaptations are for people that aren't already in the fandom. I feel like that's the thing. But like this is, I will fully admit, like the Marvel or DC movie or TV series adaptations, they might adapt a comic book character into a film that I've never heard of. And now, okay, cool. Like I have a chance to see this thing and discover it. And now maybe like get really involved in this fandom. When I heard they were doing a Jessica Jones series, that prompted me to go and read all of Jessica Jones' Alias, which I fucking love. So, you know, I just feel like I can see it from the other side is what I'm saying.
Now with Ghost in the Shell, no one liked it because no one saw it.
Correct.
You know, I saw it. I mean, I saw it for free and I wanted my money back. because I'm white and I noticed the racism.
Oh boy. I have not seen it, but I heard about that last scene and I was like,
they have a scene with her mom and her mom's Japanese. Yeah. And yep. It just stood out to me. I'm like, so the ultimate being's body is a white woman?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's so problematic. It's so uncomfortable.
Like, if you're going to adapt something and you're going to completely whitewash it, set it in Detroit and...
Right. I mean, that is the thing is, you know, like this Death Note thing, it's like they're setting it in Seattle. So, okay, fine.
It's so hard, and especially with you know, whether it's anime, manga, or video game adaptations or whatever, I feel like there's a lot lost in translation, and I know a lot of people have said it's really culture when it comes to anime that's lost in translation when they try to make movies, live action.
Yeah, yeah, I think that is definitely true. You know, it's just like. It's very different culturally over there, but like not in a bad way. It was interesting when I was in Japan, people asked me if I had any culture shock and I was like, not really. 'Cause I've been watching anime my whole life and I feel like I've actually like picked up all these sort of little quirks of Japanese culture. And it's a culture that's so focused on like good service and being proud of your work and like keeping up appearances. So like everyone is so polite. It's like Tokyo is disturbingly clean. And everyone again, like was just so, so nice. And especially, you know, I am at an advantage being a white girl with blonde hair, you know, I'm exotic over there. And so people just loved me. And, you know, anytime I would go buy stuff at a store, they'd be like, oh, you want all these free things too? And I'd be like, sure. Every Japanese store has just like lots of little random cute knickknacks. yeah. So again, it's like, for me, it was almost more of a culture shock coming back and being like, why isn't everybody like giving me stuff for free and being super nice to me?
You should watch Ghost in the Shell just to the American movie adaptation just to get angry. If you ever need to get angry, just watch
it. Uncomfortable. Yeah, I'm sure that it sounds like it would make me very angry and uncomfortable. So
it's so strange. I get sad, especially like. And I know you play a little bit of video games, the JRPG, like Final Fantasy, and all that, and the adaptations of video games no one has got right. Even Mortal Kombat was stupid.
No, honestly, I very much enjoy the original Mortal Kombat film because it is so bananas, but it's like the right level of bonkers that it's fun. Mortal Kombat Annihilation is just terrible, as are most other video game adaptations. No, I think the only good, quote-unquote, video game adaptation that we've seen
Mario Brothers.
Is Wreck-It Ralph. Oh, Mario Brothers. I ironically love the Mario Brothers film. Oh, my God, no, but, like, in a it's garbage kind of way. But, like, it's so fun to watch because it's such garbage.
I just love, like, reading the stories about it and how terrible it was on set.
Oh, it's so funny. Yeah, that movie, oh, boy, it's all over the place. But, yeah, I agree with you. Like, video game adaptations, they just – I don't know what it is that they can't figure it out. There's a new anime series right now called Grand Blue Fantasy the Animation, which is an adaptation of a JRPG called Grand Blue Fantasy, which is actually a mobile game, but like has some of the developers behind like Final Fantasy on it and Nobuo Uematsu, who's the very famous composer who did the music for the Final Fantasy games.
So like Square Enix?
Yeah, did the music for it. But it's not actually published by Square Enix though, but a lot of people who've worked with Square over the years, worked on this game. And the anime series is pretty fun, actually. There's been a couple of, like, sort of decent anime series of video games or, like, OVAs, so, like, original sort of direct-to-video stuff. But even in anime, like, overall, they still haven't, like, quite gotten the video game adaptation right.
I feel like the mythos of anime and video games is just really hard to adapt on screen without completely wiping it away and starting with the blank slate.
Yeah. And I mean, for me right now, it's like, you know, playing Persona 5, like, I obviously, like, that game is, you're literally playing an anime, but, like, it's so fun to play and to affect what's going on that, like, I don't know that I would want to watch an anime series of it. I just want to play the game. So I think there's something in that, too, that, like, you lose the charm of the sort of exploration aspect, the fighting, the level building. Like, that just – you can't translate that kind of joy to something that you are not actively participating in.
Yeah, it's just disappointing. And Warcraft, they tried really hard with Warcraft, and they threw a ton of money at it.
They sure did.
So much money.
Yeah.
And before I let you go, I know you like Star Wars.
I do. I love Star Wars. Actually, I'm looking right now. So I just did my first solo stream of Persona 5 over at Hyper RPG, and one of our fans sent me some gifts for my first solo stream. So I got two model kits made by Bandai. So I got Boba Fett and a Resistance X-Wing fighter from Force Awakens. So yeah, I gotta build those. I'm so excited.
My wife gets so mad at me because I'll be at like Walmart looking for stuff for my daughter, some toys for her. And I'll see that, you know, a lot of the stuff from Rogue One is on clearance.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I want the lead character from Rogue One. She's only $10. And my wife's like, it's $10.
She's the best.
It's $10. Come on, don't. You can't do that. But I'm like, but I can get, like, all the characters.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
You gotta have your stuff. You gotta have your nerd.
You do. You gotta get your toys. Yeah, it was so funny. I was having a bad day one time, and my roommate was at like Target, and she saw an action figure of Kanan Jarrus from Star Wars Rebels, and she didn't know who it was. She just knew that was the character that Freddie Prinze Jr. was, and she's like, "I bought you a Freddie Prinze Jr."
Freddie Prinze Jr.
Yep.
Have you had a chance to meet him yet? I know he's been on some quieter shows.
No, I've met Freddie many times. He's lovely.
Now, with Star Wars, when did you watch your first movie? Because you were born in 86.
I was. The first Star Wars film I saw, I saw them in order. My parents.
The intended order or the original order?
No. I saw them. Oh, God. I'd seen all of the original trilogy by the time I was four. So it was long before the prequels came out. I watched. God, I must have been three when I watched New Hope. You know what I mean? Like, I was tiny.
That's good. That gives me hope because my daughter's only one and a half. And I'm like, you know what? When should I expose her to Star Wars?
Oh, yeah. I mean, and I was into it at three. I tell this story all the time, but I saw New Hope and I loved it. When I graduated from preschool, we had like caps and gowns, and the boys had blue ones and the girls had white ones. And so I kept my white graduation gown and I would wear that and pretend to be Princess Leia. Cause it looked kind of like the dress she wears in New Hope. So yeah, I saw New Hope and then I saw Empire, and Empire was really scary at, you know, 3 or 4 years old. But I loved it. And I didn't quite, cause when you're that little, you don't quite get that ending is clearly a to be continued. So I didn't like quite get that there obviously was a third movie. And then one night I discovered my parents watching the third movie and they were right at the beginning. And I got so mad at them that they would withhold this information from me, that there was a third movie and that they would watch it without me. And so I sat down and watched Return of the Jedi right then and there. And the funny thing is I already owned Ewok's Battle for Endor on like Laserdisc, I want to say. So I'd already seen that movie. And then I'm watching Return of the Jedi and I was like, wait a second, there are Ewoks in this?
Did you watch wasn't there an Ewok show?
There was a cartoon. Yeah. Yeah. I don't recall ever watching it. And I saw the Ewoks movies out of order. So it was really weird to go back and watch the first one and be like, oh, man, that family that got killed off right at the beginning of Battle for Endor is all alive in this one.
And aren't they not canon? They're not canon, right?
Oh, yeah, they're not canon. Yeah, they're not canon. Though there's a lot. There's this, like, theory going around that Captain Phasma is Sindel all grown up.
That's not possible. So are you a prequelist? Because Ken Napsok is a converted prequelist.
You know, I said to Ken yesterday that I feel like I need to rewatch the prequels. I love Clone Wars, which I think is the best thing that ever came out of the prequels. The animated series, obviously.
Not the movie.
But not Attack of the Clones. Well, the movie's fine, but yeah, the animated series, both the Genndy Tartakovsky micro series and then the, you know, extended series, which Dave Filoni came in on as a producer and continues to make amazing Star Wars things to this day. I feel like I need to watch the prequels again. And I know that I like remember watching Attack of the Clones when I was recovering from having my wisdom teeth removed and I was on painkillers and I had to leave the room because like I couldn't handle Hayden Christensen like not really opening his mouth when he talked. And that romance is like watching paint dry. But I need to give him
sand goes everywhere.
Yeah. Yep. I need to give him another chance. Because there is good stuff in there. That's my feeling.
Poor Hayden.
I know. Like, it's not his fault.
You see him at Celebration, and you see the pictures of him, and you see a guy whose, like, soul has been relieved.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, finally, people are cheering for me after,
two
decades of people just giving him so much shit.
Yeah, poor Hayden Christensen. Yeah, I feel, I think it was really that the script was not great. And he wasn't, I think, experienced enough an actor to like do something with a script that wasn't super good and without really good direction.
And I heard at that point, George Lucas basically liked the smell of his own farts. I'm not saying it he did, but I understand what he was getting towards and his obsession with technology. Obviously, very smart man.
Sure, sure, absolutely.
And I see where he was going, and he wanted to create that, you know, again, it seems like I'm using the word mythos every 5 seconds.
Yeah.
But he wanted to create such a backstory, just like with Lord of the Rings and J.R.R. Tolkien wanted to do. You know, but I don't think he writes good dialogue.
Yeah, I think that you are correct in saying that.
Now, moving on to the new films, and how did you like Episode 7?
I loved Episode 7. For me, watching it, it was like it was Star Wars for a new generation of Star Wars fans. I mean, George Lucas has said it himself. Star Wars is for 12-year-olds. And that's who it should be for, because that's what keeps the storytelling so fresh and interesting. Because with Force Awakens, you felt like this could be somebody's first Star Wars film. Obviously, like, it had enough of what happened previously and enough of the characters from the original trilogy, which was fantastic. But like, if a kid, this is the first Star Wars film they've ever seen, they're not going to be confused. They're going to be delighted. And for me, watching it, you know, and seeing Rey fighting with a lightsaber, I just got really emotional thinking about all of the little girls that would come into this, and this would be the first Star Wars film they ever saw. And the most badass character in it is a girl, and she's a Jedi. And it's amazing.
you'd think it would happen a lot earlier to have like a 5-year span, like we're going to have like.
Yeah. Like, you know, it's interesting because I, you know, me being a fan of the animated series, you know, we've had Ahsoka for forever. And it's really weird to me that like people who've never watched the animated series, like, don't know who she is.
It's interesting, and people didn't like her at first.
I know. What a character arc.
And she's grown on people, and to the point where I think folks would be disappointed not to see her in an upcoming film.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Now speaking of Star Wars, and just, you know, I'll touch on two very different points that hopefully don't sound insensitive.
Sure.
At the same time, the passing of Carrie Fisher, how did that affect you?
Oh, God. I mean, so watching the stuff coming out of Star Wars Celebration this year, George Lucas just kind of confirmed something like regarding Carrie Fisher as Leia, that he was very adamant that he wanted Star Wars, The Rebellion, to be Leia's story. And, you know, she said it herself, like, she is the original badass. She was just such, I mean, the character of Leia, like, way to like totally divert the whole damsel in distress thing, like right from the get-go. I mean, from the moment that Luke shows up to rescue her and her first reaction is, aren't you a little short for a stormtrooper? You know, I know so many women who, like, she was the first character that they saw and they were like, oh, when we're playing these epic games, I don't have to like sit on top of the jungle gym and pretend to be rescued. Like, I can fight with a blaster and I can be involved in this. And just Carrie herself was so, she was such an amazingly honest person. And I just loved that about her. I'm so, so devastated by her passing. And I mean, obviously, like, they'd already filmed everything for Episode 8, so she'll be in that. But I know that they're not going to have her in episode 9. And like, it's just, it's very sad because I would be, I feel in my heart of hearts, they didn't have any intention to kill off that character. And so now we'll kind of see what happens. But yeah.
I feel like it's very important to point out that she wasn't just an actor. She was,
oh God, she no. Was
a,
I mean,
she was a writer. She was a comedian. She was a, you know, a,
yeah. Well, a and figure. I mean, and Rian Johnson even said, like, you know, he would sit up with her every night and like fix the pages of the script for episode 8. So I, God, I cannot wait to see this upcoming film, knowing how much of a hand she had in it and how much of a hand she had in the original trilogy. I mean, she could quote those scripts backwards and forwards because she actually did a lot of work on them herself. So, oh God. Yeah. She was amazing.
So how would you move forward? If you were in charge, if you were Kathleen Kennedy, how would you move forward?
God, I would not. I mean, obviously, there's been other franchises recently that have had to deal with this. The first one, of course, that comes to mind being the Fast and the Furious films. And they did kill off Paul Walker's character. I would find some way to, I don't know. Again, like, I really don't want to kill her off. But, like, how do you not and not digitally recreate her? You know what I mean? It's like, I feel like I want to find some way to like creatively write her out of the story. I mean, maybe it's maybe you have a little bit of a time jump. You know, we definitely had a decent time jump between episodes 4 and 5. So maybe there's a way to have a time jump and like have it be like, well, Leia's off doing something else that's really important and ruling the galaxy like she should.
Maybe she's frozen in carbonite. Technically, maybe. She isn't dead.
Yeah, that's true.
I just hope they don't recast her. And I know they're not going to do the digital.
Don't think you can recast her. You know, she's irreplaceable.
Now, I do have this idea, and I hope mm-hmm. it isn't crazy. I'm mm-hmm. like, no one has said that Mon Mothma is dead.
No.
She'd be around, what, like 80, 70 or 80 years
old?
Oh,
for sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You could bring her back. You could jump forward, whatever, 5 or 6 years. You could say, yeah, you know, whatever, General Leia has passed or, you know, she right. got frozen in carbonite by her
sure,
son
yeah.
or something. Or
yeah, definitely.
You know, there's a tasteful way to do it. I just don't see, like, I just can't imagine. Like, at some point they had to get all the minds back together, all these people that have worked with her, you know, at Lucasfilm, get them into a room and write their friend out.
Yeah, I know. Ugh, it sucks. I feel like the only way I could possibly be satisfied, like, with her death is if she went down in, like, a totally epic battle with, like, Snoke or something, you know what I mean? And that obviously can't happen, so.
Just to close up Star Wars mm-hmm. a bit. What does Star Wars mean to you? Like, Sailor Moon is the world, and Ninja Turtles was, you know,
my gateway into nerdery.
Yeah, one of those precursors. What does Star Wars mean within the realm of your nerdhood?
I mean, Star Wars to me is, it's so interesting. I'm trying to pinpoint what it is, because somebody, when we started doing Pencils and Parsecs at Hyper RPG, Bert, our GM, who is fantastic, kind of asked all of us like what it was that we loved about Star Wars. And for me, it's the rebellion side characters. Like, obviously you've got the Jedi mythos at the center of it all, but for me, it's the rebellion. It's about people who are in an oppressive society, like standing up for something better. And I think that there's just a really good message to take away there, because at the center of Star Wars is actually this galactic war where, like, the people in power are bad and, like, the good people are going to rise up and make the galaxy a better place.
absolutely has no reflection on what is happening today, because
no,
I would never make a political statement whatsoever. Dear,
no, definitely not.
Lord.
Yeah.
Rogue One, and I'm like, oh, I'm wrapping things up, but Rogue One was so, I found it so entertaining, but when I found out the alternate ending, I got slightly disappointed. I'm like, so they could have lived?
Yeah, I know.
Like, I'm one for, like, the mystery. Because, you know when, I'm forgetting every single character's name today. I always do that.
It's okay. There's a lot of names in Star Wars. So
when Darth Maul got cut in half.
Right.
In episode one, and they brought him back in the cartoon.
Yeah.
And in my nerdy, horrible mind, I'm like, K2SO can be brought back. He's a computer.
Exactly.
He's a computer. Obviously, maybe his CPU, maybe his memory is just stored in there on the planet. Yeah. And
I really hope we see K2SO in the next season of Rebels. I feel like we could.
We totally could. And Emma, thank you so much for being on the show.
Oh, you're welcome. No problem. My pleasure.
Me and the five people that listen to it, four of those plays will be mine. The other one will be my cat because she steps on my keyboard. Thank you. But
you're so welcome.
Where can people find you?
Well, I am on Twitter and Instagram at my name, Emma Fyffe, EMMAFYFFE. That is all F's as in Fred, no S's as in snake. They sound the same on the phone or when you record them into a microphone and transmit them into somebody's ears. Gosh, I'm doing so many things. You can frequently catch me on the Schmoes Know live show on Wednesday nights now at 7 o'clock p.m. Pacific time. Also on every week on Pencils and Parsecs, which is the Star Wars RPG show I do over at Hyper RPG. That is twitch.tv/HyperRPG. We stream live 9 o'clock p.m. Pacific on Friday nights. Again, Adventures in Fyffedom, which is my solo streaming show also over at Hyper RPG, is at 1 o'clock p.m. on Tuesdays. I am playing Persona 5, as previously mentioned. It is a whole lot of fun, and I just started last week, so like it's really easy to catch up to where we are in the story thus far. And then I also can be seen on TV Talk over at Collider, doing post-game interviews in the movie trivia Schmodown.
So is Josh McCuga's arms as hairy and creepy as they look on TV?
I think they get a little exaggerated on camera, but he's a hairy man, but not Josh McCuga.
Now you can catch me, Corey Knott. That's N-A-U-G-H-T, not N-O-T. Naughty without the Y. That's the way my wife calls it. Now I use that everywhere, and it's just freaking terrible. But you can catch me on AdventuresInNerding.com. You can catch my writing on SchmoesKnow.com. I also admin the Movie Trivia Schmodown group.
Go to AdventuresInNerding.com and watch previous episodes.
You like this show?
No. It's the worst show ever.